Hello everyone and welcome to Into the Wild, the podcast. First of all, I'd like to quickly stop and wish you all well during the current global events of COVID-19. It really has been a scary few weeks for us all and a shock to our lives, and I hope so far you've all been unaffected. Because of the recent events, Into the Wild has had to change its structure of its shows, meaning no face-to-face episodes for the foreseeable future. Instead, we'll be having telephone interviews with animal charities, conservation organisations, animal experts and presenters to ensure we can bring you the animal and nature content you rightly need at this time. On today's episode, I spoke to Mark Boardman. Mark is the head of living collections for 7 sites belonging to the Wildfowl and Wetland Trust. We spoke about the importance of managing a wetland centre, the different animals you can find at these sites, and how they are managing during the current global pandemic. Thanks so much for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a comment or a review, and share with the world. Take care, stay safe, and enjoy the show. Hi Mark, thanks so much for joining me on today's show.
Hey Ryan.
How are you doing?
I'm alright, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. Not too bad with current things, but we won't mull over that too much because I think everyone's probably going to be sick and tired of the corona chat at the moment. I'm really excited about this chat today. Obviously, me and you know each other through past careers at the zoo, in the zoo world anyway, but I guess I've not really sat down and spoken to or caught up with you much about your current career, where you're working. One of the reasons why I'm most looking forward to it is because you work for the UK Wetland Centres, and they're one of my favourite areas to visit in the UK anyway, because it's just always such a fun place to go to, I find. It's such an awesome environment to visit from a wildlife point of view and just a calming point of view. So for the listeners, can you tell us a bit what your job is and what that kind of entails?
Yeah, okay. We've got 10 centres across the UK, Wildfowl and Wetlands Trust centres. 3 of them are purely nature reserves and are managed accordingly. 7 of them, also alongside the nature reserves, have collections of animals, mainly wetland birds, but we also have obviously a few mammals, otters, and we have a very comprehensive collection of amphibians at Slimbridge Centre. So my job is supporting those 7 centres with the living collections. I go into various facets with regards to looking after their training, their development, the recruitment process. We look at the collection planning, and currently I've just done a 15-year plan looking at the collections across the organisation, and how to take them forward and how they best inspire and motivate people about wetlands and the wetland stories and associate messages that go with the taxa that we keep. They're really a sort of a window into wetland environments and habitats, and very key with regards to educating public about wetlands and the amazing animals that live there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that kind of leads me nicely on to the next point. Like, a lot of people would ask, why is it important to preserve these kind of areas, wetland areas in particular? Why is that important? What would you kind of say to those people?
Well, I think that's been a key, hasn't it, really, over the winter. I mean, we've had all these floods everywhere. Really, the wetlands are the sponges of Mother Nature. They absorb huge quantities of water, and they slowly release that back into the environment, whereas obviously we've drained them all for agriculture or tarmacked over them, and now water has no sponges to go and sit or stay in, and it just runs off the land, goes straight into the rivers, and we all moan about desilting and everything, but really we're our own downfall, really, making the water go quicker into the rivers. Like, rivers can't cope, no matter how much desilting you do. All you do is move the problem further downstream. So in the first instance, you've got wetlands acting as a sponge. Secondly, the range of diversity with regards to the taxa, the fauna and flora is huge in a wetland environment. And again, you can see great examples of that if you go to our wetland centres. With regards to health and well-being, getting people out and about, our reserves are a great place and a great source of well-being. Going out in the open doors, especially on days like today, beautiful sunny sky, you can go and stretch your legs, see some amazing waterfowl, water life, whether it's dragonflies, insects flying around you, or the birds on the reserves, never mind the collections themselves. So they're a great asset, they're a great educator. With regards to, we do a hell of a lot of work as well, conservation-wise, around the world, preserving wetlands, talking to people about wetlands, educating people, creating wetlands around the world. So they're key with the gut in lots of aspects. And if you remove them, then you're going to remove a lot of the animals and the fauna and flora they got with them. I'll pick one example. 2,000 years ago, there used to be Dalmatian pelicans in the UK. But we basically destroyed all the wetlands, we drained them, and pelicans are no more in the UK. And it's just a clear example there of what happens when you remove the wetlands.
Mm. So it's kind of that keeping that environment going to ensure that, I say, native and non-native from seasonal migration, especially from the birds' point of view, to keep that kind of activity happening.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have a huge influx at some of our centres, anything between up to sort of 40,000 pink-footed geese plus go to Martin Mere alone, never mind Slimbridge Centre and Welney on the east coast. There are three primary, along with Calaverock, which again is a barnacle geese centre, up in the southwest of Scotland. Even going over to Ireland, we've got a centre over there called Castle Espy. It sits on the banks of Strangford Loch, and again, they can get 30,000 Brent geese sitting on the loch in the winter. So seasonal fluctuations, variations, we are key centres for the migratory geese, certainly. And again, we sort of emphasise that around the world as well, making good sort of fly lines in Eastern Asia and the northwest of Europe. These flyways are crucial with regards to migratory species, and we work with the local NGOs in those areas to develop new wetlands, so they're sort of like drop-off points for these birds on the migratory routes, educating people about their importance, hopefully reducing the shooting instances, making people aware about wind farms or high voltage cables, etc., to protect the birds on these migratory routes.
Yeah, and we spoke just before we recorded today, and I think this is a point that's kind of important to bring up, although we said we won't talk too much corona chat at the moment. But there is kind of a key point you mentioned prior to recording. It was, how is this kind of everything that's happening at the moment with the UK lockdown affecting the wetland centres for not just you and the team, but the management of the areas themselves, especially when in regards to, as you mentioned, the seasonal breeding that happens with a lot of the birds?
Yeah, it's very difficult. We're just, this weather we're having at the moment, it's very settled, warm weather, is just kicking everything off to think spring's finally here. We are going into the breeding season. This couldn't come at a worse time, but we have to think of worst case scenario, and do we have the resources and people in position to rear our birds and look after the animals correctly in those environments. So we have to think very carefully about what we're rearing this year, make sure we have enough people on our sites. The essential teams will be managing the collections and managing the reserves. But also, we at the same time still got to keep social distancing in place, even so we might end up with split shifts, so we might end up to ensure that half the team works half the week and the other half, that they don't come into contact with one another, because we can't afford for too many people to either socially isolate themselves or come down with COVID-19.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really sensitive time for us. We're trying our best to manage remotely, whether it's email, Skype or phone calls, and support the teams, make sure they've got the correct PPE or disinfectants, and discuss if we do have hatchings, what's happening with regards to those hatching, where are those birds going, how can we best accommodate them within our centres. But again, it's not just about us, everyone's in the same boat. You've got to make sacrifices to get through this, but I'm very confident we will do. And like everybody, I think we'll come out with some learnings from this and probably be in a better position when we come out the other side.
Absolutely, yeah, I think that's the best optimistic look to have as well, and I think I shared that with you as well. So back onto the nature reserves, we were talking about seasonal animals migrating in and out. Do you have a favourite seasonal animal that you kind of see visit the centres, or do you have an animal that's just there all round that you enjoy seeing the most?
This probably sounds a bit crass, to be honest, but dragonflies.
Yeah.
I started working in zoos in 1983. Never particularly exposed or observed dragonflies to the extent I can do now going on the reserves. The habitats we've created are perfect breeding grounds, and the variety and colours of the dragonflies, every time I go out in the summer, late summer especially, blows me away, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I think they're one of my highlights. And then the only other one, just on that one, is a little plover, breeding little plover. I was at one of our reserves, actually, in Tyne and Wear, up in towards Sunderland area, year before last, and they had a little baby plover, and it was on one of the islands, and I basically described it as a pom-pom on legs, which is basically what it is.
What it is, yeah.
Such a fragile, small, tiny little bird, hatching on through due to all the work and effort put in by a reserves team to make the correct habitats, is a very special feeling, you know?
Yeah.
And we're lucky enough to be able to share that with all our visitors.
Yeah, that's amazing. I agree with you on the dragonfly front. I've been... my girlfriend at the moment lives on a narrow boat, so we've been on the water a lot more in the last six,
yeah,
7 months than I ever have done before. And I do agree, you really start opening your eyes to the more of the insect life as well, as you're,
yeah,
just kind of on the water.
Yeah.
So you see the abundance of it, and it is kind of, especially dragonflies, because they come in, like you said, such a range of sizes and colours and just even activity. It is great to see. So yeah, I share that with you. That's a cool animal to pick.
Yeah.
In the last few years, obviously, climate change and the climate crisis globally has been heavily in the media, quite rightly, and it's affected, I would say that there isn't one industry that isn't affected by it, probably, but have you noticed any changes seasonally in the activity in the animals coming in and out of the centres, or in the management of the centres itself? Has there been a drastic change for you guys?
Not necessarily in the animals. I mean, obviously from a conservation perspective, some species of geese are on the decline because there's still a lot of shooting going on, or they're crashing into the new wind turbines or power lines. So we are very much aware of that. But I would suggest probably the worst impact we've had, given the fact we're managing wetlands, is probably flood damage on our own sites, to be honest. The volume of water that's now coming into our centres, they weren't designed for it. So we are having to either raise areas of our land or install some very major industrial pumps to move water around far quicker than we anticipated, to make sure we you know, the amount of flooding we've had probably in a 4 or 5 years is very extensive, and we just can't really go on that with regards to that. So a lot of mitigation going in place with regards to long-term effect of global warming, and certainly the weather events, as we've seen again this winter, the amount of rain that's UK's been battered by, we've had to struggle through that as well. So yeah, like everybody else, but I mean, again, wetlands are a great storage sort of battery for CO2.
Yeah,
you know, they absorb a huge amount of CO2. So again, the positives of having wetlands, just keeps going on and on and on. And so the more wetlands we have, the more CO2 we can store, and again, reduce the impact on the environment. So again, another tick in the box with regards to wetlands.
Yeah, so, and excuse my ignorance on that, on this front, but when you say the CO2 absorbance in the water reserves, do you mean that from the plant life and everything, and the plant life,
the peat bogs? They all absorb CO2, and they're, like I say, they're like a battery. They'll hold the CO2 as well, and they'll absorb it.
Right.
But at the same time, when you then drain a wetland out, and you basically engage in removing the peat, etc., you're also then releasing the CO2 back into the atmosphere.
Wow.
So another negative reason for not messing with wetlands, just make more of them, should I say.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that front, I guess one of my final questions to you, well, I'll say penultimate because I think I've got one more at the end of my throat, but if you could pass one bit of advice or guidance to the generation today in regards to caring for the planet, whether that be on any level with the wetland centres or in any way, shape or form, what kind of advice do you think you'd pass on?
Don't put it off, I would say. Do it. If you feel so passionate about it. Like I say, I started in the industry in 1983. I guess then a lot of zoos were menageries. They were visitor attractions.
Mm-hmm.
And the pressure from the environment and people generally, you know, zoos have to exist for a reason. And if it's education, conservation and research, fine. But I think the real focus is conservation. What are your conservation goals? What are your aims? The world can't take the battering it's taking at the moment. The amount of people on the planet, you know, is not slowing down. Wherever I drive around where I live, I see new housing estates going up. There has to be a tipping point somewhere. Mm. And without sort of conservationists, ecologists, passionate people who really want to protect the planet, without those sort of people, you know, the planet is going to dissolve slowly into one big housing estate or retail park. So, you know, when you start off in the animal industry, have a goal, have an aim, but make sure it's really valued and really something to protect the planet. Like I say, it's changed massively since I started. I'm very privileged to be working for Wildfowl and Wetlands Trust. I see the amount of work they do around the globe, not just within the UK. Like I say, we work in all areas of the world, whether it's Asian flyways or out on the Russian tundra, you know, head starting spoonbill sandpipers. We engage in a lot of areas, and it's all about trying to sustain the natural world. So I'm very lucky, and if other people can sort of follow along that guidance and really tackle the things that are happening today, because I think we maybe back in the early 80s we didn't have the foresight to see this, well, dare I say, the predicament we're in at the moment.
Absolutely, yeah.
and if people have the foresight to see, you know, I'm not saying they've got a crystal ball, but what I'm saying is act now, don't delay, don't dither, and go for it, really.
Wonderful, thank you. My last question is, like I said at the very beginning, is I know why I want to visit a wetland centre, and you absolutely know what you get from that. To our listeners now, what, I mean, I guess also maybe say where the wetland centres are as well. Where are the ones around the UK, and what can people get from this, or what do you believe people can get from visiting one of your wetland centres?
Wow, okay. The seven that I support myself are Castle Espy in Northern Ireland, Martin Mere in Lancashire, Llanelli in South Wales, Slimbridge Centre in Gloucestershire, Arundel Centre in West Sussex, London in Barnes, and the Washington Wetland Centre in Tyne and Wear. Mm. And then we have another three. We have the big reserves are at Calaverock in southwest Scotland, Wellney in Lincolnshire, and the Stuart Marshes down in Somerset, which are very, very extensive. I guess anyone would say these days being outdoors, enjoying the fresh air and seeing the fauna and flora alive around you is first and foremost good for your health and well-being. Yeah. Instantly. In addition to that, I think we are great educators for wetlands and what they stand for. So again, being immersed in it, as you would be visiting one of our centres, is a great way to be educated, whether you are out on the reserves or whether you're in the collections seeing some amazing rare water birds or amphibians from around the world. We can hopefully inspire you to want to be a conservationist, to want to protect the amazing fauna and flora from wetlands. We are basically a portal, a window into the messages and stories. And ultimately also as well, if you find yourself wanting to support our causes across the world, then yeah, please be a member, or please see how you can join us being a volunteer, or one day maybe get a job at WWT. It's a great place to work, great people and great causes.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for taking the time. I very much appreciate it, and I know the listeners will as well, Mark. It was good to chat to you and good to catch up.
No worries. Thanks, Ryan. See you
again. Cheers. Bye. Cheers.